Bam, Jason Waller here with the Bam Podcast. That's right, Business and Money Podcast. You want to make money? You want to conquer business? You want to go ahead and get that mindset right to take you to the next level and level up? You got to listen to the show. We're going to have all kinds of guests on there, billionaires, millionaires, athletes, actors, you name it. We're going to have them on here. They're going to be talking about their success, their struggles, their life, their hardship. I'm going to talk about my success, my struggle, my life, my hardship. So tune in. Bam.
Such a good vibe, bro.
Try. What's up, everyone?
What's up, man? I cannot wait to ask the guy on the podcast what he thinks of that music, because he's out on the East Coast. He probably loves country. He probably loves rap. Well, that's a little thing called hip hop. So we're going to ask him here in a second about that. But before I give you guys his name, guy's built companies worth over $400 million. He's done it several times. He's lost a fuck ton. We were talking off air. And the amount of money he's talked about losing with some of these businesses and having to rebuild, like, makes my stomach want to shit itself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just hearing some of it, but I admire a lot of it. But, you know, the biggest thing that wanted me to just reach out to him and just be, you know, thankful and blessed enough to even have him say yes to being on the podcast was, I've been watching his content, right? And Eli, you know me a lot, dude. People's delivery, people's authenticity, people's ability to speak to their own imperfections, but just really just be relatable and not feel like there's any character behind anything, but they're just authentically themselves and having enough strength and just temperament to talk about some of those things and give deliverables, I think is huge, because we've been around some guys and fortunate enough to be around some guys that have been that way, and it's helped us a lot. I try to be that same kind of guy. So regardless of people's followings or any of that, like, just the guys that are just kind of true to themselves, true to a process, authentic. I love that stuff. And I like this guy. It's, you know, over a million followers, right at a million followers, tons of companies. But, like, we almost didn't even record this damn thing because I wouldn't stop talking to this fucking guy before we even recorded. But super cool. But we got I'm going to call him an entrepreneur extraordinaire. We've got Jason Waller, like Baller, but with a W. But we've got Jason Waller on today. Such a stud. If you guys have not checked him out on Instagram or anywhere else, like, definitely check him out if you guys are building your business. If you've already hit a certain level, I think some of his companies were worth $1 billion. So I don't think there is a level that would make you out of reach or out of perspective for listening to his content and just giving him a follow or talking to him about the coaching that he does. But, man, without further ado, Jason, what's up, dude? Appreciate you being on, man.
Hey, man, great intro. Thank you guys for having me on. And I love the setup. You guys look so relaxed. You're having a good fucking time. Chill, you're right? Chilling. I love that.
It's chill. What you don't know is, like, Eli is, like, sweating bricks over there.
Both hands, like, pushing buttons over here.
He's, like, pushing hands with buttons.
He's got to run to the bathroom every now and then, right?
That's right. No, I got a bucket over here, bro. I'm good. There you go.
And, hey, man, I got to ask you, right? So that music that we have, it's a band called Long Cut. A lot of folks don't know him until we introduce it. It's a buddy of mine from the Marine Corps who's a great rapper. You're going to hear it on the outro. But I don't know if you've caught wind being in North Carolina out there with the music lane, I guess you could call it, called hip hop.
Which is, like, I'm assuming country
rap.
Country rap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard a little bit of it. I like country and I like rap. And I've got,
there you go.
You know, I've got four kids, 24, 19, 16, and 12. Yep. So they like all the new music. So I'm getting a taste of it all. And to have those two come together is pretty solid. I just saw T.I.'s son was doing something recently too. I don't know if you saw that on social media.
No, I didn't.
He sings country. He's got the guitar, the cowboy hat, and everything. And T.I.'s son, and he's spitting a little bit of rap while he's singing country. It's pretty cool.
It's kind of like hit or miss, right? Like, I think Long Cut, they do a great job. I'll send you a song from Long Cut, Jason, and get your thoughts on it. But I think they do well. But I also admire them, man. Like, I love giving them a shout out every time we do a podcast because we play their music. But these guys are also ground up, man. And, like, when the pandemic hit, there were no tours, and these guys are up and coming, right? They weren't big names like Jason Aldean or someone else where, you know, you're going to be okay. You know, like, I mean, he went back to school, dude. He got on the GI Bill. He's, like, learning how to be a fucking barber, you know, like, just whatever it took to make sure that they could go back to doing what they love, which is what they do now. And anytime people do that, I have a lot of respect, which leads me to, you know, chatting with you. It's so intriguing when we've talked about how much you've lost and then you've built it all back, right? Because I think that's where, you know, when you talk about sports, when you talk about the UFC, a guy who wins a Super Bowl, and you're like, cool. Well, now the test is if you can do it again, because that's the real test. Or a guy like loses the belt or wins the belt. Well, you got to defend your title before you're considered a champion. Or if they lose it, okay, so yep, so now this is where the test is to see if you can get it back. And part of me is like, fuck, is it just never enough for spectators? But then more importantly, I try to resonate and just listen to the man in the arena and how he compartmentalizes getting his belt back and why he wants, like, who gives a fuck about the commentators? Like Connor losing to Nate, he went right back into the same fucking weight class, right back to the same rules, to the same fight to win that. And it's like, no matter what people speculate of whether, you know, defending your belt makes you a champion or losing it and getting it back or going into a different weight class and getting a second one, who cares about the spectators? I love hearing like the articulation from the actual fighter and his why with why he's doing it. But man, like, I want to start just to chronologically go through it of like what your literal day $1.00 was in business. And then the exciting part per se for the episode is going to be when we get to the fall and where you grew it back up. But before we get to that, man, was there, you know, was it when you were 10, 12? Like, when did you kind of become this entrepreneur? Like, what was your, like, were you leaving corporate America? Were you broke as fuck? Like, what was it? And what was, like, I guess for you, that literal start, that literal day one dollar fucking zero, man?
I think when my old man, he still is, he's a blue collar, hardworking person. We never had a lot, you know, lived in a trailer park, didn't even know what the fuck a trailer park was till we moved into one. People talk shit, but he worked two jobs. My mom worked third shift doing a bakery. I'd help my dad deliver papers at night, but he had a best friend that opened up a video store back in 91. So 91, 92, 93, 94, he helped his best friend opened. This is when Blockbusters and shit were popular, right? And his friend was making millions of dollars and he worked at AT&T at a Corning plant. And so I had a little brother and sister. I was getting ready to be a freshman in high school. So eighth grade summer hit. And my dad's company at AT&T were closing the plant in Phoenix, Arizona. And so he came to myself and my mom and my brother and sister and were like, look, they're closing the plant. We're going to have to move. Let me pick a city we're going to transfer to. And it's kind of where I grew up in Phoenix, right? I grew up with all of my homies and essays there. Like, that was my fucking home. That was my shit, right? And I was like, I don't want to fucking move. And I remember Mike talking to my dad, and I remember eavesdropping. I talk about it in my book. I was eavesdropping into their bedroom, listening to my dad and my mom have heated conversation. And my dad mentioned that Mike offered him to open up a sub shop next to one of his video stores and my mom have a bakery and that they could stay in Arizona and fulfill their dreams of running their own business.
Right.
And my mom was like, yeah, but Jeremy and Jesse, that's my brother and sister, have asthma and you have great benefits. And so they went back and forth and he said, all right, you're right. That's what we need to do. So he made that decision and we decided, I remember he took a map out. We had to pick Arkansas or North Carolina. We ended up picking North Carolina, which was great because I met my wife and got four kids and two grandkids and all of that. However, we first moved to North Carolina. We moved into a trailer park. I didn't know what that meant. I was made fun of at school. And I watched my dad not only work at AT&T there that transferred, but then he would deliver papers at night. And while I was going to school in high school, I was helping him deliver papers at night to pay the bills. It was hard. I watched them work so hard that they weren't around. I was basically raising my brother and sister. And it was kind of, you know, their frustration was somewhat abusive when you're young. I mean, that's the time we grew up. I'm not going to bitch and complain about it now, but that's what that if you compared to now, it'd be crazy. But I remember having it playing gin rummy with my mom and a buddy of mine and gin rummy or spades that day. And I remember telling my mom that, look, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Didn't even know what the fuck it really meant back then. And I'm going to open up my own business and travel the world and have a Winnebago that says, you know, Jason's place and drive around. People are going to come party and that's it. And my mom's like, oh, well, I said, no, I'm going to. And I said, she's like, well, I was like, look, I love dad, but I don't want to fucking be him. He was always scared to take a chance. I don't want to be scared to take a chance. So I've always lived my life on when the unicorn comes by, you got to jump the fuck on the unicorn because I've watched my dad regret his entire life of not taking that chance. Now, That's not a knock on anybody that doesn't, because sometimes you don't have that fire burning in you. And maybe my dad didn't, but I still watched him have regrets. And I always told myself I wasn't going to have regrets on something I chose not to fucking try. If I have any regrets, it's me doing something too long or things like that. But I'm not going to have the regrets of not taking a chance. And so I kind of had this mentality of I've got to be bigger and better than, and being made fun of at school, wearing fake Tommy Hilfigers, getting in fights. Went to 5 high schools because of fights. Like, I never belonged. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to create my own fucking destiny. I mean, you know, my mother-in-law, she's my mother-in-law now, but their family didn't like me because I lived in a trailer park. So I had so much to prove to people that it just became this fucking chip on my shoulder to, I am going to make money somehow, some way, and be my own boss.
I think 2 things there, right? Like, and it's ironic you're speaking to some of this because I wrote about it today on Instagram, but you know, I think baby boomer generation, right? Like your father, you know, like I'm younger than you, but you're not old enough to be my dad. And like, I'm the youngest of all of my siblings. So like my dad is almost 70, right? So I'm sure your dad is older than him, but they come from that same post-World War II.
My dad's 63.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So they're both baby
boomers. I'm 43.
So they're baby boomers, man. Like they're baby, right? And like, I think part of it was just, cause even my dad, he's an entrepreneur. He got laid off from like an aerospace company when the spaceship blew up on live television in the 80s, and electronics were not what they were now, right? Like that. Right. Once that happened, layoffs were just like crazy, and he couldn't find work, so he had to create his own telecom company. But he was still running it like a 9-to-5. Right. He wasn't making pivots or necessarily expanding something. You know, I guess the way I would correlate it is like, I appreciate what he did for us, but I feel like he just created his own job. I feel like he was self-employed, not entrepreneur. And there, you know, and there is a difference. But when you're talking about the fights, when you're talking about, you know, the fake shoes and the trailer park, like, man, that's painful. That's embarrassing. And, you know, I wrote on Instagram today, man, about some of this stuff. And I'll get a little snippet from it here real quick. But what I wrote about is, people don't change until it's too painful not to. This isn't assuming that the only time people change. However, this is definitely most prevalent in my experience as a leader. It's not a lack of knowledge. It's not a lack of resources. And it's definitely not self-doubt, as romantic as that one sounds. Bottom line, more times than not, people just haven't had enough discomfort at whatever threshold they've become accustomed to. It's not when I think they should or anyone else, when their pain / discomfort in themselves or their situation becomes painful enough. Change, it's when it's like painful enough for them, change is now on the table. Finding your why is also one of the most romantic topics of discussion lately, as in the past decade. Personal opinion, I think a person's why is ever evolving and at times can just completely change, which by definition makes it a little inconsistent at times, which is why I feel motivation lacks periodically as well. Both your why and motivation are tied together. What doesn't change is your relation to prior pain, and no matter what, never wanting to go back to that ever again. Hence why I feel relating to your pain points versus the romantics of intellectual debate over why journeys is more productive. And I feel like when I'm hearing you describe some of your childhood and being made fun of and getting into fights and living in a trailer park, like that's pain. And like, you feel that and you're resonating and there's no getting away from it, right? Like everyone wants to escape their pain nowadays as quickly as possible, right? Fail fast and whatever other romantic shit that's out there. Well, hey man, there's some pain big enough in this world. There is no escaping it. Like you're going to be there for a while, but when you're there, it marinates, it resonates. And I feel like every one of your accomplishments after that chapter of your life is almost like fueled by like never wanting to be broke again, never wanting to be picked on or whatever again, but also not falling victim to it. You took charge and accountability of your own life and you lit it on fucking fire. You know what I mean? And like, what are your thoughts on me elaborating on some of that? Like with people not changing until it's still too painful not to, right? Like you run businesses, you do coaching. You ever like think of that stuff, man? Because people are always searching for their whys, right? And it's so romantic. We should have some wine out when we fucking talk about it. And for me, it's like, man, I don't know who I want to be. I know who I don't want to be. That hits home better. And I remember pain points of like certain chapters in my life that I never want to go fucking back to. And like, those are really kind of like what I feel like keep me going. Watching a guy like you, you know, speak to some of your childhood, like I feel like it's some of your pain points as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I think everybody in business, life, relationships, it's all tolerance, right? So how much can you tolerate till you actually fucking do something? And I think that, you know, when you're a kid and you're a teenager and you don't realize it, like I have teenagers now, or I got adult kids too, and I've got teenagers, and they're like, I'm bullied at school, and their bulliness is different. They're bullied because their dad's been on TV and commercials, or, you know, we drive around a nice shit and the kids are jealous. I was bullied because they were like, oh, that's a fake gold necklace, and that's a fake Tommy. You're not allowed to the party. Like, you know, I was with a group of people that we were outsiders, right?
Dude, we're so similar, not to cut you off. I remember when I was going through like junior high, I'm 38, you're 43. So we've got, you know, five years apart, right?
Yeah.
When I was in junior high, you were in high school. So remember your high school days. Remember Master P?
Yeah. Dude, I had him on my show.
Dude. Okay. First of all,
full super circle. Dude.
But
full
listen, circle, listen, man. Listen, dude. Listen, bro. When his shit was coming out, man, you had C Murder, Master P. Like that was my shit. Cause I Mystical, also grew up.
All those guys. Yep.
And I grew up in like a less fortunate urban, whatever you want to call it, like diverse community, right? So I was into hip hop and stuff growing up, and like, dude, I had that fake gold chain, and I had, do you remember when like the windbreaker suits came out and you wear like all the same color? Dude, I had the all white windbreaker with the white baseball hat and the white Nike Air Force Ones and the fake chain, but I would wear
the wife beater underneath, right?
No, I wore the Tommy shirt. I wore the Tommy shirt underneath it, the white one. I had the red one for the red one. Like, what a fucking cornball I was. But, man, like, when you talk about some of the hip-hop stuff and the chain and the Tommy, it's like, dude, that was our era, right? Tommy jeans, gold chains. And I used to wear the all-white jumper because of the song Ice Cream Man from Master P, right? Like, oh, man, song. Digressing, but getting back to your part.
Yeah, no, and look, that was a great era. I mean, I remember, you know, saving up money to go get my first real Tommy. Actually, the first Tommy came from my girlfriend, which is now my wife, brought it, and I was just, like, so excited. But, that was a big deal then, and I was a sophomore when I started dating her, and that was when I got my first Tommy. So it was 2 years into school. But, you know, it's funny that you say that, you know, a lot of people go through this, you know, it does fuel it. But then I feel like those similar problems, but different versions of it that are relevant, put you in that same cycle again, because then that kind of fueled me. Okay, I'm going to go do well. And I got these great jobs, right? And I was making all this money. And then it was like, I can't get promoted because I don't have an education, because I'm really young. So even though I'm the best salesperson, I'm training my people that are getting, you know, promoted before me based on their age, race, or education, which I thought was bullshit. And I was like, look, I need to be my own, you know, create my own map and be my own boss and really be a true entrepreneur. So then I opened up my first company when I was 24. So from like 17 to 24, I was making over 100 grand a year at whether it be the bank doing financial sales or AT&T or Verizon Wireless. Like, I was one of the best salespeople on the fucking planet. And I was like, this is great, but I need more. And then, so when I went in and opened my own business, that's when it all happened again. Family doubted me, friends doubted me, people talk shit. It made you insecure, but I turned it into fuel, exploded that business, exploded the next business. And then when I left that, I was with all of these people in the home security business in Mexico. They have a Monotronic/Brinks dealership partnership thing that they have there. And all the top dealers in the country were there. And I knew these guys. I competed with them and we were peers. And I remember the last time I was there, 2015, I just opened up the solar company. I closed my alarm company, but I was still invited to that event because of our numbers the year before. Every one of them will talk shit. Every one of them's like, you're going to get into what? Solar? You're fucking stupid. Like, and they weren't mean.
You're
like,
fucking stupid.
Well, they wouldn't say that because I'm a very confrontational motherfucker, but they're like, that's wrong. I wouldn't do that. You know, they're that kind of person. I'm like, and I could sense that they all thought they were better than me. And it was like, here's that feeling again. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you, motherfuckers. Get your popcorn out. Get your fucking Coca-Cola. Put a straw on that bitch because you're going to drink that shit fast because I'm going to put on a fucking show. Yep. And that's what I did. Fast forward, after 3 years, 2 years of fucking grinding and being silent and finally making money, All those motherfuckers were calling me to get mentored and coached to open up their own solar business. And like seven or eight of them now run successful solar companies. Mm-hmm. And then I ran one of the largest private solar companies until I didn't. So
being against the grain is just not new for you. Being made fun of or having
people
challenge
is not new for you. My company closes and it's like, what do I do next? And so I always, it just repeats itself. If life's a roller coaster, you're going to have your peaks and you're going to have your valleys. And it's almost that history repeats itself as a different version. That's what I've kind of taken 100%. From this.
And man, like if there's one thing, like on our climb, if there's one thing that like creates some discomfort for me, for, you know, whether it's peers, guys that I look up to that are further along in business. And this is not you, by the way, this is one of the reasons why I really appreciate who you are, because you're not, you don't have this trait, but you start getting around super, super successful dudes and they've become really, really magnificent at something, but then it gives themselves the impression that like they know everything now.
Right.
Like they start speaking to stocks and bonds. They start speaking to what you should do with your money. They start speaking to, you know, what you're doing as a father. They start talking to you about your marriage. And it's like, hey, man, like you got to be so careful being great, because you're going to start bleeding your opinion into so many different lanes. And people that are immediately around you that benefit from your success, they'll let you. And it's one of the most unattractive things I've come across, and I've got some friends that are not like that. You're very authentic. We're getting ready to get into like how you built solar and how it fell. Like, it's so cool that you've got enough strength to even talk about that on podcasts, as and just understanding of like how important that is for guys like us that are up and coming to hear like those lessons. But man, like I feel like those guys having their opinion about like what you did, like what you're going to do with solar, and you're one of the most successful guys in the alarm world, just as successful as them, if not more. And like, they're so opinionated at the top sometimes. And it's like, dude,
people love to see the hero fall, man. That's sick. Most of the people enjoy watching the hero fall, but in a twisted, weird case of fate,
because it makes them feel better about themselves. Those same motherfuckers
love to see the hero climb back to the top. Yeah. Like people forgive. They forgave Kobe. They forgive Tyson. Like the time is forgiving. And then they want to see people at the top again. And so you just got to be able to weather the storm. You got to be able to take the punches and just know that it's not permanent. You got to be able to fucking say, okay, you know, it's frustrating because we have these things, right? And these things make everything in life. I need instant. We're talking about coaching before we got on here. I'm like, I need instant. I need fucking 1,000 people I can coach. And it's like, no, like I got to pace myself. I got to do it the right way. And it's just, hey, if I gain one personal client a month, that's great. And, you know, I'll be making really good money and helping a fucking 20 people out in the next 20 months to fucking make hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Sure.
And in life, we have to remember that every little move, 1% better every day, makes up the difference. And I also get caught in my own bullshit where it's like, this isn't fast enough. I got to do something. And I'm sure you do. Everybody does. Yeah. And you got to just pace yourself and go, hold the fuck on. Like I've been here before.
It's so true, man. We've got a phrase, you know, back in the Marine Corps, you know, you hear it at some special operations schoolhouses, you hear it, you know, in the infantry community, and the Marine Corps infantry just doesn't get enough credit because we do romanticize like special operations, but some of the most complex, you know, circumstances that ever happened from the war were all fought by the infantrymen, and your infantry commanders that were involved in that. These are Ivy League school graduates that are, you know, that have engineering degrees, and they just also are adrenaline junkies, but combined arms, close air support, other aircraft, artillery, mortars, infantry, all of that working together. It's so dynamic. You know what I mean? And one phrase that we had back then was two of them actually, but high speed is being brilliant at the basics. If you can be brilliant at the basics beyond rapport, regardless of circumstance,
right?
Fucking high speed. That was the first one. The second one was slow is smooth. Smooth is fast. A lot of people have heard that one now, but it's true, man. Like when we correlate it to business, you know, like I kind of correlate it to, you know, like when you watch like a Nate Diaz fight, or you watch, maybe not him, but you watch people that don't know how to fight getting a little playground fight. They're just slapping 1,000 punches a second, none of them having any effect. And then you watch a guy like Conor McGregor or Iceman Chuck Liddell, where like they're very calculated, their speed, their distance, their timing, and they don't throw even half those punches. But every time they do, blood starts coming out of that opponent. They're very calculated. Right. So when they do strike, man, is it punishing? And it's the same thing in business, right? Like you can throw shit against the wall, and sometimes that's just kind of how you get started in the beginning. But then as shit starts to stick, you really got to get calculated with what's working, what's not working, and then how to triple down on what's working. And if you're going so fast, you might not see it, and you might not be able to triple down on it. You might be doing the same bullshit. And, dude, how many times have you probably met someone? I know we've met a lot of people where, you know, they're moderately successful at real estate or whatever we've helped them with, and they have no idea how they got there. They have no idea where their deals are coming from, and they're not tracking things. And so they don't really know how to triple down on something. They're kind of just, you know, still treading water the same frantic way. And it's like, you're going to fucking gas out if you continue to do that. And it's very similar like what you're talking about, where like, yeah, you want to feel like you want to go that fast, but you know that when you go faster, it's actually because you're more timed, you're more calculated, it's smoother. Just like when you hit a baseball just right, you don't feel it. When you hit somebody in football as hard as you can just right, you don't feel it. And I feel like it's very similar in business, man. Like some big moves that happen or slide into place, you didn't feel it. You didn't fucking grunt for it. It just fell right in, and you're just in that like in that good flow state. And you know, like, how do you find that pace for you? Because you're experienced enough, you've built enough, you want to go fast per se, but you're also smart enough about yourself to know, I've got to be in that flow state. I know what pace that works. I've got to be calculated. How do you find that? Is there a morning routine that you have, a daily routine, self-talk, something completely different?
I think it's a mixture. I mean, you know, you talk about some of the entrepreneurs or people that, you know, successful people that get the egos and think they know everything. And I've been down that road before. You know, naturally, you know, when you get successful and you start to expand. In my solar business, there was a time I didn't know what EBITDA was. And maybe you don't know, maybe you do, but I just learned it a few years ago. Motherfuckers, like, you didn't know what EBITDA was? No, I didn't know what EBITDA was. EBITDA? But EBITDA is basically, it's your net profit after tax distribution, right?
Oh, okay.
So it's your equity interest.
I thought it was like a federal entity for solar governing.
No. So, but the deal is I had to learn this because the first two companies I opened up was, you know, we ran cash, not accrual. It wasn't GAAP. It wasn't anything to go public. All this shit I learned. I mean, I'm just a fucking street, you know, trailer park guy that opened up a home security business where people knocked on doors. And then I opened one up where we had call centers in Pakistan and China. And then I opened up the solar company starting with digital marketing. And I was the son of a bitch on Facebook and Instagram trying out leads, seeing how this works. What pond should I fish in? I've got to understand this in order for me to scale this. And as I started to do that early on, probably the first couple of years, we lost money. Our first year we made $3 million in sales, lost $1 million. I had to sell my house on the lake. I took all the money from this home security business, put it in, bought a house. You know, we sold a $2 million house on the lake, bought a $300,000 house. Wife hated me. Wow. Kids were like, what the fuck is going on? I said, I'm all in. I'm betting on me. Wasn't making a paycheck for almost 2 years when I first opened the solar business. Then it took off. And really part of that takeoff was, you know, I stayed in the grind. And yep. Seeing, I mean, it's hard. It's like watching paint dry or watching your hair grow. Like, it's like, fucking, is it really growing? You have to be able, I'm a big believer in this, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 180. I never forecast. The CFOs would get pissed. They're like, what do you think your annual, your, you know, 2 year, 1 year forecast? Fuck you. I'll give you 6 months. I'll tell you what we'll do in 30 days, 60 days, 90. I'm real big in short, small wins, right? Yeah. I talk about there's no elevator in life. You got to take the stairs. But when you walk up to those stairs and you look up and you go, that's 100 floors up. There's no fucking way I'm going to get there. Well, bullshit. If you go, you know what? I can get to the second floor in like 10 minutes. Oh my God, I can get to that third floor 2 hours later. And you start to take all of these big goals and you start to shrink them into small little win goals. I started to see, holy shit, when I look back, hey, that's what it's like to do $1 million a month. That's what it's like to do $3 million a month, until we were doing $50 million in revenue a month. Wow. And I learned when I had to get into spots where we needed cash, we had to raise capital. I didn't know how to do that. So I had to be vulnerable. I had to be honest. I had to be able to put my ego to the side and ask for help. Real leaders own their fucking faults and ask for help. That I learned. When a leader thinks he knows everything and he's the big swinging dick every fucking time, he's not a great leader. You know this being in the Marines. Amen. When a real leader goes, hey, I need help with this. Let's fuck, like, that's real leadership to me, because you're bringing your team involved and everybody's got their own greatest strengths and you need people around you with different attributes. And so I learned that. So I had to bring a guy in who understood how to raise capital. I didn't know how to fuck to do that. I had to bring a guy in that understood EBITDA and to do, I didn't know how to fucking do that.
You're now, like, EBITDA, what do I got? Is that like a, should I go to the doctor? They got a cure for that?
That's what I thought. I'm like, is that a fucking mole or something? What is that? But when I learned, I was like, oh, tell me more. I want to know more because I don't want to be the dumbest motherfucker in the room, right? Yeah, yeah. And I don't have to be the smartest, but damn it, I want to know more. Yeah. And so I would learn. And then it got to the point that I got so good at this that I was bringing on leaders. It was like the Avengers, right? I don't want to be Superman. Motherfucker, I want to be the Avengers. I want to build a team around me that can help us all win because a small piece of a big pie is better than a big piece of a small pie. And the problem with most entrepreneurs is their fucking ego. I know everything. I can do everything. Motherfucker, you're slowing your own growth.
Yeah.
And you're hitting a brick wall too many fucking times.
So you're signing Will and Eli today then. We're just teaming up, man. You're gonna take us all the way through EBITDA. Dude, I gotta ask you though. I gotta rewind a tad bit. I have a serious point. I have a funny question for you, but you know, like we casually passed over, man, I had to sell my house. I'm all in on me. We're living in this $300,000 house. My wife, my kids, like, what the fuck? And you know, like that's harder than man, most people can stand, right? Yeah. Like, and we talked about this yesterday with a gentleman, and I was talking to him a little bit about just not being my, you know, like my lady. I'm not her favorite person every day, nor do I have the expectation that I'm going to be her favorite person every day. But she also doesn't necessarily see or have clarity on the vision of like what I'm doing, nor should I expect her to see that because she's not in it every day with us and what we're doing. So she's not necessarily privy to seeing it all. But man, how did you weather that storm, right? Because it's one thing when you got haters or people talking shit or these alarm guys going, solar, what the fuck? Like, you know, fighting at school, one thing. But when your own flesh and blood and the life and the wife, you know, you love and you know they don't hate you, but man, they're just frustrated. They don't see it. You're creating discomfort for them. Yeah, betting on yourself. There's a lot at stake there, you know? And like the first question with this is, you know, like, how did you stomach it? How did you weather it? You know, what was life like then when you were building, man?
Bam, Jason Waller here from the BAM Podcast. That's Business and Money Podcast. And I have my new coaching out called Business and Mindset Coaching. That's correct. Where I take my experience and my knowledge, which I have got a long sheet of it, building 4 companies over 9 figures, the last one worth $1 billion, 7-time CEO and Entrepreneur of the Year. I've been on a TED Talk. I've got a best-selling book. I've raised capital. I've employed thousands. I've done over $1 billion in sales. I got you. And I started from the ground up. No college education. I'm talking bootstrap with hard work and learning how to build a business. I want to help you do that. Today, you need to invest in yourself and your business. There's nothing better than self-improvement. But I'm not here just to give you the hoorah. I'm here to give you the hoorah and the how-to. I'm here to give you the let's go and the kick ass. So make sure you join my BAM coaching now so you can elevate and change your life. BAM!
So the first security company I sold, I didn't get any money on. I got equity into the next security company that we took from an $18 million company to a $35 million company. And when we sold it for $7 million. People are like, well, how do you take a $35 million company, sell it for $7 million? Well, it was doing $35 million a year in revenue. It wasn't worth $35 million. And we had debt and there were partners. So I ended up cashing out and it's, you know, to some people, it's a lot of money. To some people, it ain't shit. But I was excited. It was my first $1 million. I cashed out $1.5 million in 2014 on the first business I sold. I got 1.5. One of my other business partners got 1.5. Another business partner got 1.5 because I joined their team. And then my right-hand guy got $250,000 because he's only 5% partner because we came in late. That company basically acquired our company. And then we exploded. I took that money and I put it in the business. Then I didn't have to, because I had a little money in my savings account, I didn't have to pay myself for almost 2 years in the business. But we hit a point in solar where it's a construction business. And when you're selling something, you don't get paid till it goes in. So when I had a backlog of enough jobs, but the cash flow wasn't there, the only way we would have survived is if I could get another $1 million, $1.5 million into the business. And I had nowhere to go to get it. I was offering people in the home security business now, hey, you want to buy 10% of the company for like $500,000? No. All these people said no. I'm like, okay. So I was like, fuck it. I went to my wife. I said, we don't have a choice. She's like, honey, we haven't made money. It's been like 12 months since you opened this company up. You know, I said, yeah, but I've got sales. She's like, she didn't understand. She's like, I said, look, do you trust me? Like the last two companies I did well on, do you trust me? I said, I will not fucking lose. I don't give a fuck what it takes. I will not fucking lose. And so I sold the house and the kid, they were pissed. And I said, guys, I don't want to fucking hear it. Like, let me do my thing. I promise I'm going to make life better than it's ever fucking been. But you're going to have to let me go out and fucking do this. I don't fucking lose. Give me my shot. So I put the money in the business and that helped us get through. And then by 9 months later, I started getting a paycheck. So the first year we did 3 million, lost a million. The second year we did 10 million, lost a million. The third year we did 40 million, we were profitable. The fourth year we did 105 million, we were profitable. The fifth year we did 360 million, we were profitable. The sixth year we did 580, we were profitable. The seventh, we did 680, we were profitable. And we were on pace to do a billion and valued at a billion when we closed in 2022. All from starting it out of one fucking little tiny office and not taking a paycheck and putting the money in, where I was employee one and had four other people come with me. And I did all those things. But it was a long, nasty fucking up and down journey. And you have to learn to stomach it. And I remember getting the, we bought our dream house in Michigan. It was a fucking $6 million house we went and bought in Michigan, you know, 3 years later. 2.5 years later, after I put the money in, I'm fucking, we're buying our dream house and buying Lambos, Ferraris. Oh my God, life is great. Never done this shit before, right?
Yep.
Oh my God, you know, no midgets come out, no fireworks. For those that want to get fucking Lambos and Ferraris, I'm sure Will tell you, midgets don't come out and there's no fireworks happening. It's the same shit.
Only midget that came out was, I guess he's not a midget, my 4-year-old son. We let him, we let him unveil. We had the Lambo was on the showroom floor. Yeah. And so my son was able, I surprised him. We would always go up there and check out some Lambos. And I had an R8 at the time, which is a bitchin' little car, man. Those things are fun. And prior to that, I had a GT500. So some cool cars, but not a price point of a Lambo, right? Definitely not the experience. But we would always go up to the car shows. He'd see him. And, man, one day it was like, Eli, was it like, it was a Monday. Wife was in labor, so I'm, you know, of course I'm out buying cars, right? And I pick my son up from grandma's, and I'm like, hey man, let's go have some fun. What are we doing today? What do you want to do? And I said, where do you think we're going? I can't remember what he says. He's like, mall. And now he's like, dealership. And I was like, yeah, buddy. And he instantly was like, Lambos. I'm like, Lambos, dude. Let's go check him out. And so we go up there. But what he didn't know was that the thing was already done. So we show up, man, and he got to pull that black, you know, veil or whatever off the car and run around and like super fucking cool. But you're man, outside of that, there wasn't like fireworks. It wasn't anything. There was like, you know, a different
type of. Which Lambo did you get?
I got an all-wheel drive Huracan.
So I like the Huracan. I had an Aventador and it was the worst car I ever fucking owned. I wish I had a Huracan.
So the Aventadors are great, V12, right? But they're single clutch.
It caught on fire twice. I had it 2 years. Caught on fire twice. Was in the shop 12 fucking times.
Those things, like, if they're not being opened up 100%, they don't like it. They don't like to drive unless they're kind of like a Malinois. You know, like, my wife wants one of those. I'm like, listen, man, unless they're eating a human, they don't even like life. You're not taking them for a walk. They're not hanging out in the backyard. If they're not killing something, right, those little meat missiles, right? We called them land sharks back in the military, but like, it's very similar to the Huracan, one of the best daily drivers, right? Dual clutch, V10, phenomenal experience. We're getting it twin turboed and fun, but you're right. Like, no fireworks. It was a different type of insurance, right? Different type of care. But like, it was also important for me because I had the Lamborghini Diablo on a poster as a kid. And out of all the cars that I've bought, you know, once you reach to a certain level of financial accomplishment, do you necessarily have to check the box of, you know, manifesting something? No, you don't necessarily have to, because you're like, oh, hey, I'm here. I do think it's important, though, that you check that box.
I do, too. You know, look, I mean? I wouldn't change it. I mean, I got rid of it after 2 years, and then, you know, I've got other cars. Well,
like, caught on fire. Yeah, caught on fire. I mean,
well, do something different. Also, listen, it was like when I lived at the lake, and one of the ways I sold my wife and kids on the lake, I said, listen, we lived on the lake for 5 years. It was a great fucking run.
Yeah.
There were no midgets. There were no backflips. There were no fireworks. Like, we'll be fine. Give me some time. We'll find the next best journey.
Yeah.
We moved to Michigan. It was great. Like, all the football players are coming to my house for the party. They all live by me. Like, it was a different lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And then now we're back in North Carolina and we got a wonderful house and I don't have any debt. I'm real big on having zero fucking debt, right? Yeah. I have zero debt. That's important to me. And now opening a business and doing things, I told my wife, she's like, what are you going to do? Like, you know, because I didn't pull distributions out. Like, most CEOs who pull a shit ton of money out, I left it in the business to go public, dude. The distributions we took out were only for the taxes. Like, I left all of my equity in that fucking company, and it was $1.05 billion. I was going to get $400 million in stock options in July 2022 when we went public. Like, I was pulling $100 million off the top, giving $100 million to the employees, and I was going to have the rest in fucking stock. Like, it was generation life-changing wealth. Mm-hmm. And came crashing down in like 90 days. So it's like, okay, I can sit and cry and bitch and fucking hang myself, jump off a fucking building, or I can say, you know what? I'm going to build something like that, but it's not going to take me 8 years. It's going to take me 3 to 5.
And but how was that? Like, before we get to that, did you slam your dick in a door? Did you like slam your head in it? Like, there had to be a, like, sometimes you just got to, you can't help but feel it. So you're like, fine, I'm going to fucking feel it. And then tomorrow when I wake up, I got to get going. But like, was that painful enough?
It's funny you say that, Will. So I'm going to use yesterday as an example. I coach football. I love it, right? I love watching kids just fucking take it to the next level and get excited. And I love to fucking win. And I love to be around kids who want to win. And so my son, he's a maniac. He works out like crazy, eats like a fucking Nazi. Like, he's just unfucking real what he does. He yells at me if I have anything sugar. You're gonna get diabetes. Talk to me when I'm in D1. Like, he's that fucking kid, right? And so I only coach because I love those kids, but I love coaching him. Like, I love. And so we have practice yesterday, and he comes home from school, and I get off the plane from New York, and I'm home, and I'm like, hey, and he's like, my tummy hurts. I'm like, all right, well, shake it off. Go take a shit. And then he like comes back down. He's like, all right, I feel better. I was like, all right, goes, no, my tummy hurts again. My stomach, it hurts. It hurts real bad. And he goes upstairs. I'm like, well, dude, we got to go. He's like, my stomach hurts. And I'm like, oh, my stomach hurts. Okay, whatever. I said, okay, well, I guess maybe I got to start the other guy at quarterback. I don't know. And my wife goes to me. It's a true story, dude. I'm always fucking telling truth and I get yelled at all the time. My wife goes, you're a fucking asshole. Like, why would you mock your 12-year-old son who's sick? Mm-hmm. And then I go, you're right. I don't know. She's like, who gives a fuck? It's practice. He goes every time. He never misses. Why are you giving him shit? I said, you're right. And so I fucking went up there and I'm like, look, I'm sorry, I was a dick. He's like, no, it's fine. You're mad at me. You want to start the other kid? I don't feel good. I said, no, your dad's an asshole. Your dad shouldn't have fucking said that. I'm sorry, dude. That's on me. That's on me. So then he's like, all right, it's cool. And I was like, all right. So I go downstairs and she goes, you have an issue. You have an issue that must have happened in your childhood where no matter what the fuck happens, you're like, shake it off, get over it. You did this when the company closed. You never grieved. You're like, okay, I'm not going to fucking sit down. So when you're asking this, and she's right, there's something in my childhood of like, anytime I was the type of kid that would hit a home run and dad and mom weren't around. And I just wanted them to say, hey, good job, Jason. Or if something was wrong with me, my dad always said, if you're not fucking bleeding to death and you're not fucking in the hospital, you're fucking going. So I don't quit anything. Like, I don't miss work. I don't care if I had fucking COVID. I'm at work, motherfucker. Deal with it. I got a mask. Like, I'm that guy, right? Yeah, so I don't understand, like, you can't go because your tummy? That was wrong. And it's me being an asshole, and it's something I grew up with, but that's how I live my life. The company closed. My business partner, Kevin, still fucking grieving. Hid in a hole, crying the fucking blues till the fucking sun. I literally have, like, it's real to me, but it's, like, not real to me. It's like, okay, I'm just going to focus here. There's been a couple times because I got real angry at first. I was sharing all the stuff, Generac this, Generac that. And I helped bring their stock down and make them accountable for some of the shit that they need to be accountable for because people didn't know. So I'm glad that I was vocal, but I was spending so much energy and hate and anger and remorse and depression that I was like, I can't grow. I can't provide. I'm going to lose. They already took my company. I can't give them my pride. I can't give them my soul. I can't give them my knowledge. I have to fucking stand up. So there was a couple times I was in the shower just fucking bawling. Like, that's the time, like, just in there just fucking crying, or I'm listening to the radio by myself crying. And then I'm like, you know what? Fuck that. Like, they don't get an ounce of my energy. Those motherfuckers that took my company, they don't get to fucking take anything else from me. I'm only focused forward. Fuck that. And so that's how I've been. And people are always like, what's it like losing $400 million? It fucking sucks. But I'm going to tell you what it's going to be like to build a billion, because that's what the fuck I'm going
to
do.
And it's so important to, like, rely on your fundamentals of, like, hey man, you've built it several times. It's now it's just about, like, as long as you're not broke, then the machine of what it takes to build isn't broke. Right. And, like, those things are so important. And, like, yeah, being hard on son, like, I understand that. Like, I'm definitely, like, I think I'm normal. I say that and Eli will look at me a certain way. But, like, this is...
Oh, I bet you're tough on your son. I can tell.
I am. But I'm like, I'm composed, right? And he's only 4. So, like, I can't speak to how I'm going to be.
Wait till he's 12 and he starts lipping off, dude.
Yeah, it'll be different, you know? And, like, but here's the thing. Like, let's use John Jones. You're familiar with John Jones, right? UFC champion. You know, the same thing that makes that guy the absolute best at fighting is the same thing that makes him coke and party and hitting runs, and just there's just some reckless shit to it. Like, not, it's not a one size fits all. Like, a skill set that makes you amazing in business doesn't necessarily make you amazing in every moment as a father. It's just really trying to like identify that, and then just being better, you know, like you say, the 1% better by the day. And so when you know you have these moments, right, you cried out and you're like, cool, I gotta focus, I gotta move forward. There was no midgets and no fireworks the second you decided to move forward. It was just the same quiet, and it was the same just every day, the labor, the phone calls, the ideas. It just had to kind of like push forward. Where was your paradigm shift on what you're doing now? Like, have you had some significant improvement? Have you had, I mean, obviously, like, you're still living okay. Like, your podcast is blowing up, so I'm sure financially you might not be back to a billion, you know, but like, you've, was there a paradigm shift, or was there like a momentum shift when it really started to take back off? Because here's the thing. I'm not going to say you were doubting yourself. I'm not going to say I doubt myself. But when you decide to do something new, like when I've decided to do something new before, I've never doubted myself. But at the same time, whatever new thing I'm trying, I'm not necessarily convinced that it's going to work because I just haven't put enough time. Like when I got into real estate, right? Like I sold all my shit off. I was making good money. I helped a company build. Just so you know, like I went from the military stuff to mercenary work, to police work, to helping my buddy build a brick and mortar fitness company. We built 14 stores in 2 years. I'm making decent money. I branch off. I wasn't good with money, so I was broke. And the 10 grand I had to my name was gone in like 2 months of just kind of like getting some headspace. And at 36 bucks in my name, dude, I sell cars off, get rid of my place that I was renting, and I'm sleeping in my buddy's mom's pantry, right? Like her old Y2K pantry, bro. Remember Y2K? And I wasn't doubting myself. I was waking up, taking care of my workout, studying for my license all day. At night, I'd do Uber and Lyft to just make a buck, right? And just give me something to do at night. And then the next morning, I'd start all over. I never doubted myself, but I wasn't necessarily confident that real estate was going to be the thing. I knew I was all in for 12 months. And it was with the hard work I knew how to do, because I didn't know real estate, but I knew hard work. I knew intuition. I knew how to make pivots. And I knew that I would go all in enough to make the proper decisions. And real estate would either work, or I would meet someone, or something would come from being in this environment and then branch me off into my next endeavor. But then as Eli and I started growing, eventually the confidence of like, yep, this is our thing. We're here. We've arrived. Like, have you had that momentum shift as well? Like when you were first building what you're building now, obviously you believed in yourself, but you're probably unsure of like the idea you started embarking and whether it was going to like be the thing or not. Has it become the thing where you're confident that it's now like that next piece? And what moment happened that made you kind of feel that way?
Well, I'll talk about previously and then I'll talk about now. So when I did the solar company, I felt exactly what you're talking about. It wasn't that I was doubting myself. It was the fear of the unknown of, you know, I built two security companies, did really well. This is fucking different. This is like construction. I felt like I could sell water. It didn't fucking matter, but it's like, there's other tangible, there's like 15 departments to this fucking process. And so I got to the point where, remember I talked about before we got on that sometimes it's like verbal child abuse. When you tell a kid they're a fucking loser, they suck, they're a fucking loser, they suck. I got that as a kid, right? Sometimes my dad wasn't the greatest dad. He's a great grandfather and he's a better dad now than he was. But he would say that shit and you start to believe that. Children start to believe that. Well, adults can believe that too. If you're told something enough, if your wife tells you so many times one thing, you're going to start to fucking doubt yourself and feel that. Well, I started to question myself because my business partner was like, we need to pull the plug. We're not making money. My wife, we're selling the house. We're not making money. Everything was against me. And I just didn't have a plan B. I said, you know what? I don't have a fucking choice. So I'm either going to fucking get it done or I'm going to die trying. And I just fucking focused on it and refused to fucking lose and made sure that I maximized every decision and every second I could to do that. And it's hard to do. You got to be disciplined. I know you being in the military, you have that kind of fucking discipline to like, it's life or death. I would treat these situations like life or death. Fast forward to now, it's a little different. No debt, some money in the bank, you know, not as much money as I'd used to be worth or like to have, but I'm okay. And a new podcast I had to start and I was like, fuck, let's see how this goes. That one took off. I was like, holy shit, took off like the True Underdog faster than the True Underdog did. This is great. So I've been blessed, but it was like, what am I going to do? I feel like I don't know what I'm going to do. I invested in this other company and I gave them the pillars to do it, and they're crushing it, and they're doing like maybe a million in sales in 4 months. And, you know, it's a home service company and they're excited about it. And so I love that, but I'm bored. Like, that's just me really guiding them and having, you know, some equity through it. So what do I do now? Like, how do I position myself now? And that's where I'm confused, or not doubt myself, but it's like, where do I go? And that's where the coaching kind of fell in my lap. And it was like, you know what? I really like that. One of my favorite things of being a CEO was to do our sales meetings and install meetings or company meetings to motivate the team. If I can motivate other entrepreneurs, and I could talk about whether you're in your bedroom or whether you're a $10 million company or a $5 million company or $50 million company or $500 million company, I've been there. I can be relatable and kind of help give them what to expect and what to do next and how to guide through it quicker and better and give them return to where now I'm feeling those dopamines I need because they're successful and I'm getting paid for my experience and knowledge. It's a win. So I do see it. I just put a thing. It's funny you asked. I was flying yesterday back from New York and I put a lot of things in notes and I'm putting my goals. Remember I talked about 30 day, 60 day, 90 day. So I'm putting in, all right, how many more clients do I need to get? Cause my coaching, like, it's not cheap, right? It's expensive but it's fucking worth it. Someone's like, how much is your coaching? Don't ask me how much it is. Tell me how much money you're going to fucking make when I get done with you. Tell me how much money you're going to make in 60 or 90 days. Tell me how big your business is going to grow when I get done with you. That's what I want them to ask. And so the few guys I'm working with, they're going to build testimonials because they're already starting to take off. One guy's like, holy shit, I've been part of this program. I've already made fucking $2 million more this month learning your digital marketing than I did any month. So that's the kind of shit that I'm able to do. And I go, okay, if I can capitalize on this, and I said, okay, I get one more client this month, two more next month, three more next month. I'm doing a speaking event in June, get three more there. I do a speaking event in September, get three more there. One, all of a sudden I'm at 20. I'm doing fucking pretty good on that. And I'm making some money from the podcast and I've got some investments. Now those investments, I'm going to build a couple other companies up and partner with people, sell those down the road. So I have the map, but it's just trying to find your way. Like, I don't want to ever feel like I'm in a big black cave with a lighter. I want to be in a big black cave with fucking mega flashlights, right? And right. So you've got to be able to find the way through that cave, and you've got to believe in yourself. You got to not quit. You got to understand that if I had a plan B, I wouldn't give all 100% to this is what I know. So I treat it like life or death. And the biggest problem I have is I get addicted to whatever I think I'm going to do next, right? I'm like, I'm all in. And then it's like, all right, well, that was fun, but let me try this.
Yeah, man, we do too, right? And like, I think when you put enough work into something, you graduate to the other conversations, right? Like I've listened to a lot of Kobe Bryant stuff, and I've listened to when he's talked to players. You hear a lot of the hard work stuff, a lot of the focus, a lot of the early mornings, yep. But then when I hear some stories from like some other champions, some other hard workers, some other guys that were that committed, he's like reminding them to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's not pressing on the hard workers about more work, more this, more that. He's like trying to get them to fall back in love with the game and to still enjoy themselves now that they're there. Yeah. And I feel like for you, and sometimes for like Eli and I, we were talking about it yesterday of just like certain things, and you get the hard work down, you get the grind, you get the success. It's almost like you have to like, hey, but then as you're doing these investments, as you're helping people make money, mm-hmm. you know, but you're bored, it's like the coaching kind of like lets you be back on the ground level, right? Like it lets you kind of go back to the infantry and help dudes pull trigger. And it's like, hey, you're finding a way to like fall back in love and have fun with the entrepreneurship side while still obviously making money. And I feel like, you know, that doesn't speak to a lot of people. A lot of people are going to, oh yeah, that no, fuck you. There's only a couple people that applies to. The most of you still need to, whether you're in love with it right now or not, like you just need to learn the body of work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
But then as you do, and it sounds like you're making money, you're investing in companies, which is awesome, but you're finding a way to have fun again.
Right? I am. And I just don't know. People like, you're going to build another giant company. Listen, I love my team, and I was drinking from the fire hydrant, and like when the ride was there, I was taking CEO coaching to be a public CEO. I was going to have to give quarterly reports. The fuck is a quarterly report? Like I had to learn all this shit. I love that. And I loved it and I'm smarter for it. And I did, listen to this. I did 200 pitches. We had a pitch deck when we were trying to sell the company, bring in a equity partner in. I did 200 pitches to public and private companies, Blackstone, Tesla, Vivint, Wells Fargo, UFA, Aries, you name it, private, public, 200 of them. We had 54 offers ranging from $450 million to two public ones at $1.05 billion. That experience alone is priceless because I had each one of those motherfuckers going, I have never had anybody pitch their company as good as you. Like, so that gave me like, holy shit. So part of my second life, yes, is coaching. Yes, is investing in these companies, but to stack enough cash and bring partners in to have my own fund and buy companies and flip them and help them and sell them, because there's so much good in that. Not just the money side, which obviously everyone loves money, but there's so much good in helping entrepreneurs out there or business owners out there that don't know how to sell their company or don't know how to scale their company or don't know how to raise capital to fucking maximize generational wealth for their family that they should have. And I want to be one of those mechanisms that can do that and then be, and also profit from it, but help them be their pitch guy, be the ideas, put the money behind them. And so that is the, like, I know the coaching is here and the investments and some of the home services here, but like in the next 2 or 3 years, what excites me the most is I'll have like a BAM fund where I'm inviting, you know, millionaires, billionaires, athletes, different people to invest in that, entrepreneurs, and say, look, these are the 20 companies we're looking at. Let's talk about it. Here's what I think. I've dug into this and dove into that. And what do you guys think? And blah, 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 blah. And we do the investments and we put some celebrity names behind it and we sell the motherfuckers. Like that is the plan.
Yeah. The acquisition. I think Alex Hormozi, he's doing a lot of that too, right? A lot of the business acquisition, which is cool.
And a lot of money in it. A lot of money in it. Jason, you know, think about this. The investment company that invested in us in 2018, they paid $15 million for 25% of the company. So the company's worth $60 million in 2018. In 2022, in the reverse merger, they were going to get, I think it was $270 million.
Yeah, dude.
For their $15 million.
I can only imagine. It works. It's a model. Only, like, Eli, I can only imagine what he could do at day one, right? $0. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Hey, I'm always open to talk. And listen, I know how to raise capital. I know the people. I'm telling you, like, I love that shit because that's what I did for 2 years. Yeah. We were in transaction mode. I was doing 3 or 4 pitches a day, you know, second and third and fourth pitches. They'd fly in and they were just intrigued because that's where I shine. I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses. And I really shine on, if I believe in something, I'm passionate about it. You're fucking buying it.
But not a quarterly review. Like, could you imagine walking in for a quarterly review? Like, hey, John, I don't like your fucking pants, dude. Like, and you're always drinking coffee before everybody else. So by the time I get to it, it's fucking cold. Like, what does that got to do with quarterly report? Yep. Well, it means everyone else has cold fucking coffee, which means they're not working very hard. And that correlates to that low number over there. Right? Could you imagine? Like, that'd be my quarterly review.
No shit.
It'd be a peer review. Of like all the dumb shit everybody's doing, right?
Jason, I know we're coming up on time. I want to take a couple minutes here and dive into your social media following you've built, man. We've talked about building these massive companies. You're coming up on 1 million followers right now on Instagram, which is, you know, no small feat. You've got a massive podcast. I want to hear about that. How did you translate like what you've done in businesses to your social media? What were some of the...
Yeah, you had Mark fucking Wahlberg on. What do you... That like, helps. You don't just get to say
it's cool.
Yeah, I did. And Sugar Ray Leonard, same day, same event.
Nice.
And they're good friends. And Sugar Ray in the episode hits me like 12 times in my stomach, and I took it like a champ, by the way. He told me
fuck.
But, you know, I will say... Let me plug this in. I will say... Hold on. Fucking thing. There we go. I will say that when I first was doing social, you know, I was one of the first people to do lives for our business for the solar business in 2015. I was like, live Jason Waller here from Power Home Solar. And people were like, that's so fucking corny. It would get 10 likes. And then I would do it again. Then it would get 12 likes. And it slowly started to grow. So when we opened up in Michigan, I met some people that we're going to handle all of our marketing and PR and media buying to put us on TV. I wasn't on the commercials at the time. I was on some funny commercials with some of the NFL players for our company that we fucked around, had fun with, but we actually had Morgan Freeman hired to do our commercials. Oh, cool. And we were going to pay $5 million a year for him. This was in 2019. And the media guy goes, his name's Alan Sussman. Love the guy. He's one of the best people I've ever met. And he's a genius. But he goes, so you want to spend $5 million on Morgan? I said, yeah, we already talked to his agent. And I pitched him the commercial I had, you know, like the fucking guy walks in with a dirty face, helmet, he's all pissed off. Wife looks at the power bills, freaking out. She's like, we can't afford this. And then, you know, we have Morgan Freeman talk in the background and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they're like, let me ask you something. How does solar work? I said, well, great question. This is at the dinner table. I said, the sun beats down on your panels. Panels come down to your inverter, turn it from DC to AC. AC comes out to your home. You use that power first. If you make any extra, you can charge your battery, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, if you had one more sale for your company to get in order to stay open, who would you send? I said, fucking me. Mm-hmm. He said, then you're going to do the commercials and be in 23 million homes. I said, I'm not really interested in doing the TV commercials. She's like, no, you're fucking great. You're going to do them. So I said, let me get my team and see. So we fly our team out to Michigan a week later, and they pitch us on this whole, they show us a Coca-Cola commercial, and they pitch us on this whole like fucking iconic song. And it's going, you're going to be the face of solar. And we're going to, I'm like, all
you're
right,
walking you know. In like a suit, rescuing somebody, like a Meatloaf music video.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Fuck. And so, I'm like, all right, where do we, all right, look, what do we do? Let's do it. The team's like, fuck yeah, let's do it. So
dude, could you imagine? I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. You know that song, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
I love
like,
that song.
She wants like normal power, but it's like, but I won't do that.
You won't, you know, right. It's a great song. It's a great song.
It's a great campaign. So
you're way better looking than Meatloaf, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's not saying much, but thank you.
I said way so
we
better.
We went to the Fox Theater in Detroit, and it was that's an iconic place. And they brought in, have you heard of the Detroit Youth Choir?
No, but I'm guessing okay. They're phenomenal.
So yeah, so they were on America's Got Talent. African-American young kids, teens from like 6 to like 16. They sing better than any people I've ever met in my life. They were in the commercial. They also did some of our Christmas parties. And they were led by Coach Jay, who was their coach that built them up. And they were all over TV. They were the hottest item. So he pitched me like, hey, we have this one song we're going to have and like let the sun shine in and we're going to have them sing it on the stage and you're going to be out there like this and you're the savior type shit. And I was like, and I had white hair at the time.
Oh, fuck.
And I'm like, doesn't that seem kind of like Southern Baptist bullshit?
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's fine. It's fine.
You were Jesus.
So yeah, save the Lord. So I get in there and I'm on stage and they have a thing for me to read. I'm reading the teleprompter and I'm doing well, but I go, time out, stop, stop. The kids in the background. I said, Alan comes up. I said, that isn't me. Whatever the fuck you got written in there doesn't work for me. And he goes, oh, you think you're fucking badass motherfucker? You fucking do your own shit. He's like, go ahead, redo it. He's going to do his own shit. And yeah. I'm like, all right.
No problem.
Fucking did it. One fucking take, dude. They used to call me One Take Timmy, dude. Yeah, I fucking man. One take done. They were like, holy shit. The commercial exploded. Fast forward, I started to have to build a social media. They were putting billboards of me everywhere. Mm. More commercials, Super Bowl commercials, commercial with Barry Sanders twice. Mm. All of these things, right? Just building to where then my brand elevated. And it was like, holy shit. COVID hit. My next door neighbor was my best friend, which was Matt Prater. And then I already had a relationship with Barry Sanders. They were like, hey, you should fucking do a podcast and put us on there. And I go, fuck yeah, why not? Because it was COVID. Yeah. Mm. I did it and it exploded. Mm. So then that helped the brand. And then now I'm a big believer. Two things. One, because the death of Power Home Solar / Pink Energy gave me problems personally. Don't put your fucking face on the company. Okay. Separate the company, I've learned, from you. Your brand is your brand. Your company is your company's brand. You can tie the two, but separate them. Mm-hmm. Because what I failed at, in my opinion, is like the Tesla thing. You want to separate Elon from Tesla, which he's done somewhat of a good job of that. But when you're the MyPillow guy, and I was the MyPillow guy, yep, selling solar all the time, when your company ever hits a bump, a divot, you're the motherfucker to blame. Yeah. So it only hurts your personal brand. So 100%. My advice out there is don't do that. Your brand is your brand and it is the most important thing. Your business is its brand and it's the second most important thing. And you have to treat it that way. And I've learned that over time, but my brand starts to pick up based on, you know, connections, content. It's always putting content out there. But, you know, like I suck at fucking Twitter. My YouTube's like 20,000 subscribers. I could do better there. TikTok, you know, I could do better. Instagram's been good to me. Facebook's been pretty good to me. But it just depends. I wish I was great at all. I'm not. And I'm trying to build them all up. But it's all about just putting content in there, making sure it's real and authentic, making sure that you're consistent. And what I've noticed is all the fabricated shit like that the podcast people put out, even for me and all that, the biggest hits and engagement I get is the live shit that I do. Like, here's me and my family fucking off. Like, the natural shit takes off better than everything else.
That's cool.
Interesting. And what's, man, before we like get you out of here, man, like what's the next, you know, 30 days, 6 months, 90 days, 2 years? Like, what's your big, are you, is podcast and growing that and coaching like your, or acquisition, I'm guessing, is like also a big thing. Is there anything else we haven't spoken about as far as like, what's,
well,
what's
I think,
embarking,
you know, the company closing was a big, like, holy shit, right? It was a wake up, you know, 'cause you don't have a plan B. So getting into the coaching thing, you know, when the, after the company closed, is exciting. I've got a few handful of clients and I'm going to take some on. I don't really have a group thing. I thought about getting a group thing. I had one or two people wanted to do that. I may do that, but, you know, building, you know, courses and also getting into the M&A, the merger and acquisition side of it, and buying businesses, I think will be fun. So I think for 30, 60, 90 is all coaching slowly. Yeah. And then about 180 days from now, really start to expand the business ventures and maybe put some people together to put some funds together. I know some people, a lot of money. They're like, what do I do? I don't want my money to sit. And they know that I'm really good at business, so I can help them find businesses to be a part of and take my, my piece as well. And that's exciting. And, you know, as long as I can make a dent in this world and help people, I'm going to start doing public speaking. You know, Eric Thomas is like my hero of that. Like, I love that guy. I just talked to him yesterday and he's not going to be speaking anymore. Really? He's not going to be on stages anymore. He's kind of walking away from it.
Really?
And he charges a lot. He's like $200K to fucking speak. Yeah. And so he got to that point. And, you know, I'd like to get to that point where you're making money doing that. But, and I've got a couple events booked, but I'm looking to grow my coaching. So any entrepreneurs out there, any business owners out there, any people thinking about getting business, wherever you're at in business, you're ready to take it to the next level. You can at least hit me up at jasonwaller.com, fill out some forms. You got to fill out an application. And then you go through the process to see if it's approved for us to be together. Because there's some folks that it might not jive. It might not work. I don't want to fucking waste someone's money. It's all about getting their return on investment and then some. And then secondly is speaking engagements. There'll be companies out there that want to fucking make their team light on fire and ready to run through the fucking business. Building, I'm that guy, can get them fired up to do that. Got to know what their niche is, got to know what they're trying to sell, what their goals are, and then I want to put that in there and just be more relevant out there in a different aspect. I am not interested in having 2,000 employees again. Yep. And fucking being in boardrooms all the time. That was fun while it lasted, but I got PTSD. I just don't want to go back there.
Well, wait till we start working together.
No, so, man, keep me out of the fucking boardroom.
Dude, I'm a teddy bear, man. Well, listen, man, hang on for a quick sec. We're going to get some outro music from Long Cut going. But listen, man, such a pleasure. We're going to put your Instagram, your YouTube, you know, your primarily those two, like in the text down below. So whether people are watching this on YouTube or people are on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. And hey, by the way, guys, if you have not listened to us on Spotify, we are now video on Spotify. Not everybody has that, but we've been accredited that through Spotify, which is super cool. So if you guys like watching video, but you're super friendly on Spotify, check it out there. We'll have all of Jason's stuff as far as where to find him and all that good stuff, his website, his Instagram, his YouTube, all in the text below. But Jason, dude, so much fun. What a pleasure. You're almost like the guy that should be the regular on some show. We're probably not a big enough show for you to be, but like you should be the regular on like on somebody's fucking show that comes in every month. Like, remember when Dr. Phil was on Oprah's show every month?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's a good gig. I as long as that moved the needle and it made a difference.
It's got to make sense. 100%. Yeah. It's got to make sense for you. But such a pleasure. So much fun, man. Hang on for a quick second.
I enjoyed this. This was a good conversation. I mean, I like what you guys are doing. I'd follow you, obviously, Will, what's going on.
Yep.
And you're very inspirational out there. I love your post. I love the story about your son you just told. So, we're excited to have you on the BAM podcast as well. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, man. Super unexpected that you invited me on. You know, I know the trade-offs, but it's always, we never have an expectation. We just like getting good dudes and, you know, people have treated us well. We try to have a great reputation with what we're doing. And I feel like I should just come in person, but you don't know this, Jason. I'm going to sleep in your backyard for like 2 weeks. And then just hang out.
You got a great pool, man. And fucking all turf basketball court. You'll have fun.
I'm just going to hang out by your office because, like, wait, Mark Wahlberg and fucking
I know, right?
Sugar Ray in the same day. Like, if I just camped out for a week, who the fuck am I going to say?
He'll have his ghillie suit and shit. Just be careful when you're mowing.
Hey, I live in race. All the race car drivers are here. Kyle really? Busch and all of those guys. So,
well, they love cowboys like me, buddy. It'll be a lot of fun, man. But, dude, such a pleasure. We're going to kick some outro music, and then I got a couple private questions for you in regards to just our podcast and some courses that we've made. But, man, for everyone that's listening, I hope you guys got some value out of this, and definitely go check out Jason and hit him up if you guys need something.
That's right. Appreciate you guys. On. Day $1, $0.
Out of here.